court will proceed to the sixth case, Swearingen versus Momentum Specialty. Ms. Damish?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. It is the position of the appellant in this matter, Paul Swearingen, that pursuant to the Illinois Supreme Court case of Lefebvre v. Chemlite Company, that Momentum Specialty Chemicals liability stems from their knowledge that Mr. Swearingen was on its premises, offloading chemicals in a place where he had a right to be, without an alternative to offload those chemicals in some other safer area of the company. Secondly, in applying the Lefebvre test, Momentum failed to rebut Mr. Swearingen's deposition testimony that if he failed to offload the chemicals in question, he was subject to termination, and it was reasonable for Momentum to believe that this would occur. Third, Momentum, having set out a bill of lading for this product to be unloaded, had reason to foresee that drivers such as Mr. Swearingen would inevitably encounter a workspace too small for him to maneuver safely. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, the consequences of placing the burden on Momentum to provide fall protection material is slight, so slight that Momentum already provides such other equipment in its own plants for its own employees. And as Mr. Swearingen's boss indicated in his deposition, it would be lacking in common sense to believe that drivers would bring their own platforms and fall protection equipment to various plants around the country. It was completely reasonable for Momentum to anticipate Mr. Swearingen's deliberate encounter with the sprinkler system. They knew that he arrived at their plant with his truck. They knew or should have known that Mr. Swearingen had never been to this plant before. Momentum directed Mr. Swearingen to the place where the chemicals were to be discharged, and there's no evidence that Mr. Swearingen would have known where to go without Momentum's direction, since he had never been there before. Furthermore, it was reasonable for Momentum to foresee that when a person such as Mr. Swearingen stands in a curvilinear tanker vehicle without fall protection equipment, he would encounter lug nuts too tight to unscrew and therefore be required to leave the truck's ladder in order to complete his required duties.
I would like just a little bit of understanding here. One thing, what was the wire cutter for that he carried up with him?
Yeah, he was trying to go ahead. This is like a dome light on it, and the dome light is secured to the top of the tanker truck with both screws and things that you use the wire cutter for in order to be able to cut down so you can get the screws off.
You mean you actually have to cut your way into this thing?
Which, yes.
Is a permanent?
That's a standard part of the opening of the dome lid.
But how do you close it again?
That I couldn't say.
Is that some sort of seal?
It's a seal, yes. It's a seal on top of the tanker.
Once it's empty, there's no need for the seal to...
He just offload the chemicals, and he puts the thing back down and goes for the next load.
It's an empty tank, I guess.
Yes, it's an empty tanker.
Then they rewire it, I guess, when they fill it up.
That's my assumption, although I don't think that's in the record technically.
Well, the reason I ask that is because I'm curious when they see the picture of the ladder, it goes up. Why a man 6'4" can't get to the top of the ladder and do all of that as opposed to having to get on top of it?
Yeah, as he testified to, when he got down to the lug nuts and found that the lug nuts were too tight, the only way for him to get the proper torque over the lug nuts was to actually get off the ladder. That was his only way to be able to get to the lug nuts.
Okay, so and he only does this 20% of the time.
I think that the testimony is that drivers offload chemicals in plants such as Momentum 20% of the time, yes.
Well, that's what he did, at least.
Yes, that's correct.
So this would be a very unusual procedure then, where the lug nuts are too tight and he's got to get on top of the thing?
Well, I'm not sure if I'd use the word unusual. I mean, certainly when you have 20% of drivers offloading chemicals in a way similar to the manner that Mr. Swearingen did, I don't think, it, in our view, it's not unreasonable to believe that there are times when the lug nuts are going to be too tight and someone will have to take further corrective action in order to properly do their job, in order not to face discipline or be terminated.
Is there evidence in the record that the defendant should have foreseen that circumstance you just described?
Well, I don't think there's any evidence one way or the other. There is certainly evidence that in other plants that offload chemicals in the same way, other Momentive plants, that they supply the kind of fall protection equipment that we believe should have occurred mm-hmm. here. So our position is that the reason that Momentive supplies fall protection equipment for its own employees in other plants is because they know that there is a rather significant risk that people doing the same activity that Mr. Swearingen was doing would in fact fall off the top of the tanker. And even Momentive in its post-incident investigation found that the lack of fall protection equipment and the lack of adequate space where Mr. Swearingen was working were factors which contributed to his fall. There's also no rebuttal to Mr. Swearingen's deposition testimony that 20% of all chemicals are offloaded by drivers such as Mr. Swearingen, not property owners, and it makes sense that drivers would want to offload the chemicals in a timely fashion, that the corporation would want to receive the chemicals in a timely fashion so that each party could proceed on to their next appointed task. There's no evidence in this case that Momentive wanted Mr. Swearingen to wait in his truck for further instructions. There's also no evidence that such instructions were given. According to the Morrissey case, the foreseeability question is based solely on the basis of the property owner's knowledge that drivers would encounter a hazardous condition and that drivers would encounter that hazard in order to fulfill their obligations and to keep their jobs. Simply put, if Momentive Specialty Chemicals can foresee sufficient chance of injury to their own employees so that they supply fall protection for them, then they can foresee sufficient chance of injury to the 20% of the industry whose drivers offload chemicals on their premises. Momentive, having invited Mr. Swearingen to bring product to the plant, having opened the door to their premises in a highly regulated industry, having directed him to the place where he was to offload chemicals, now wants the opportunity to walk away from a condition which they created. As attorneys for Mr. Swearingen, we respectfully disagree with that position and ask that the drastic remedy of summary judgment by the trial court be reversed.
Thank you very much. Ms. McCall?
Thank you. May it please the court. As I think everyone recognizes, this case really turns on whether Momentive had reason to expect that Mr. Swearingen would leave the safety of his ladder and actually climb on top of his truck with his own 2 feet and start to stand up such that he would be in a position to hit his head on the sprinkler system. There's two witnesses that gave deposition in this case that testified to this. One was Momentive's health and safety manager, who said, "We expect all of the drivers to maintain 3 points of contact on the ladder when they're opening the dome seal." We also have, perhaps most telling, the testimony of Mr. Swearingen's own employer, Carrie Penn, who said that he had no idea that Mr. Swearingen was in the habit of leaving his ladder and climbing on top of the truck. He testified that he expects drivers to, quote, lean over while they're still on the ladder and reach over and undo the dome lid. He also testified that if he knew Mr. Swearingen was actually standing on top of his truck, he would have sent him for retraining. And he further testified that he's never had an employee fall off the top of a truck before. Also, Mr. Swearingen himself testified that he never brought this issue or what he considered to be a hazard to Momentive's attention. As the district court found, there's just really no evidence from which a jury could find that Momentive had any reason to believe that Mr. Swearingen was going to climb on top of his truck.
Counsel, how do you respond to opposing counsel's point that obviously Momentive did, because in other circumstances at other locations it provided safety equipment to prevent falls?
The record is that it provides safety equipment to its own employees who are doing a different task than what Mr. Swearingen was doing. Mr. Swearingen's only task was in order to protect the integrity of the truck that his employer owned, he was opening up the seal. That was his only role. Our employees are given fall protection because they have responsibility for actually loading the chemicals into the tank in the first place, which is done from the top of the tank. They actually have to walk around on top of the tank in order to do that, which is why we provide fall protection to our own folks. So obviously when we know that people are going to be walking around on top of their trucks, we do provide them fall protection. In this case, we simply had no reason to believe that Mr. Swearingen would not be doing this task from the safety of his ladder.
You have a picture of the truck. Somebody does. The blue brief, I guess. And as I see it, the ladder goes up and then goes at an angle.
The pictures are a little bit odd. The ladder kind of goes up the side of the tank, and then there's a flat, what they call a catwalk, around this box that the dome seal is in. But the ladder does. Yeah, the ladder goes up the side of the tank and then connects to this catwalk that runs around the dome.
That's part of the truck.
Correct. It's all attached to the truck. It's all part of the truck design.
Okay. So he's not on top of that slippery. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think all of the evidence shows that everyone believed this task could be done from the ladder. Mr. Swearingen, for some reason that day, believed he had to get up on top. We don't know why, but that's not really the issue before the court with respect to the deliberate encounter exception. The issue is whether we thought that he was going to do that, and there's just nothing in the record to show that we thought he would. In fact, it's just to the contrary. I also just want to point out, Mr. Damisch referenced the accident investigation as somehow creating evidence of knowledge of the hazard. Of course, as with any incident like this, the company did an accident investigation and determined lots of different factors that may have caused it. But obviously, nothing in that investigation goes to what Momentiv knew about or anticipated before the accident took place. I think those were really the only issues I wanted to cover, unless the court has any other questions.
Well, I guess I just want to be clear. There's a platform on top. I don't know how big it is, but is it for somebody to walk around on? Or
No. The platform is it's about maybe 2 feet across.
Okay.
There is some evidence. There's various reasons that people are up there doing things. For instance, when our folks are up there loading it, they are using that grating, that catwalk around it. So it's there for various purposes because there's various things people might be doing on top. But in this instance, there was no reason that you would anticipate he'd be using that catwalk at all.
Well, how does one maintain this, you call it three-point?
Mm-hmm.
If it takes two hands to put the wire or loosen something, what are the 3 points?
Our position, in fact, is that it doesn't take two hands. There's nothing in the record from anyone other than Mr. Swearingen that he felt like he needed to use two hands.
Do you have a wrench or something? Or just one hand?
You just open them with your hand.
Oh, really?
You don't need a wrench, correct.
And all that is supposed to do is release the vacuum?
It releases the seal so that when you start unloading the chemicals, it doesn't collapse like an aluminum can.
I do have a question about
yes.
The Salami v. Eaton case. There's a four-factor analysis the court is to engage in addressing foreseeability and likelihood of injury. The last two factors deal with the burden of guarding against the injury. Would you concede, as I think counsel argued, that it's a minimal burden on if we were to place the burden on Momentiv of guarding against the injury?
No, in fact, we do not concede that. The act of providing fall protection is pretty advanced, actually. It's not just a matter of saying, here's a harness. You actually have to train someone how to use it. You have to supervise them. You have to provide harnesses of a certain size. And if Mr. Usab's deposition testimony, which is in the record, he's the Momentiv Health and Safety Manager, and he discussed at his deposition the difficulty in not only providing the equipment, but also the difficulty in requiring a third party who is not your employee of requiring them to do certain things. the difficulty in supervising them and the difficulty in enforcing rules against people who are not your employees. So we would definitely say we do not believe the burden is slight. We disagree with that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. McCall. Ms. Damish?
Yes, I'd just like to point out a couple of things in rebuttal. First of all, in the record as it stands today, we don't really know what Momentive does in terms of providing fall protection equipment to its own employees. But if, in fact, we go back to the trial court and we find that Momentive does, in fact, give fall protection equipment to their own employees because they have a tendency to walk around, I have a feeling that we'll be arguing to the jury that they're doing the same thing that Mr. Swearingen was, in fact, doing. When they say they didn't know that Mr. Swearingen was going to try to untighten the lug nuts, it makes me shake my head, because I guess I would answer that by saying, well, what did they think he was going to do? He's there to do a job. He's there to do his job. His job is to offload chemicals. He didn't do it by diving off the top of the truck, as there's a case with water where somebody just dives into the water here on the north side of Chicago. He just was trying to do his job because he felt that if he wasn't going to be able to do his job, he was going to go ahead and lose his job. And finally, the last point I want to make before I finish is that Kerry Penn, again, Mr. Swearingen's boss, stated something that really it gets down to a matter of common sense, and that is when you have drivers that are taking chemicals all over the country and they are going into plants that have different configurations, different setups, different way of managing their operations, that the idea that a truck driver is going to go ahead and bring his own platform to stand on versus the idea that the company who is receiving the shipments basically on a daily basis, it doesn't make any common sense to put that burden on the Mr. Swearingens of the world. It makes much more sense to put the burden on the highly regulated chemical industry, as Momentive apparently did in at least a certain number of their shops around the country. So that's why we ask that you reverse the district court.
I accept that premise with respect to a platform, but what about a harness?
Well, again, the testimony of Mr. Penn in this particular case is that even as to harnesses, there are so many different kinds of configuration of pipings that exist throughout chemical plants in the company that even as far as harnesses are concerned, you could not be able to supply one harness that would fit every situation that you're going to run into. I think that's what his testimony was in his deposition.
So there isn't a harness that is designed to somehow attach to the truck?
That's correct. Not one. That's correct. Yes, the harness would have to go onto the piping of the place where the chemicals are being offloaded.
Anything.
Sorry.
So every place would have to have its own harness. There's
yes.
No way you're gonna. And I don't know enough about it to know what they do or not. That's why I was just curious about this ladder, where they described it's a matter of leaning up and with one hand loosening the valve so that it creates the releases of whatever the vacuum, and then that's all you do.
That's right. The ladder only takes you so far in the configuration.
And you see, when he said he was 6'4", he made a big deal out of that, because if he stood up on top, it's his head. So a guy 5'6", maybe, I don't know, couldn't stand up either, but whatever it is, it seems that a 6'4" guy can really reach it by still remaining on the ladder. That's why I'm trying to figure out why.
Yeah, he said in his deposition he was not able to reach it, and I think part of the problem was is that for whatever reason these particular lug nuts were I think particularly tight.
Okay, so that's a little different.
So that he had to go ahead and exercise additional torque to get them off.
All right. Well, because when you say you can't reach it, well, that's with the ladder in the truck. That's part of the. I call it the everyday operation, and if but if they were too tight, I guess that's different. That's why you go change a tire, you find out somebody put it on with some
right
whatever you want to call it, the thing that screws it in and makes it so tight you can't annually on loot.
But I think the one point, if I just may take 30 more seconds, that I want to really emphasize in this particular case, unlike some of the other open and obvious cases, I'm using the diving case as a particular example, where somebody in the face of a sign that says don't dive in this particular area does something that they're really not supposed to be doing. And in the case of Mr. Swearingen, even when he's trying to unscrew the lug nuts, he really was trying to do his job in the best way that he can, and because he was within his job, it was foreseeable that things could happen as part of that job.
Just on that note, it strikes me as you were describing that, Mr. Damish, on the open and obvious, as you look at the exhibit, you see the ladder starts to curve to follow, I guess, the contours of the truck, and your suggestion is that leaning over, despite his height, still doesn't give him the leverage to get the torque necessary. It strikes me on the open and obvious question, one of the things a driver of a significant vehicle like this is always conscious of is clearance, right? Whether it's bridges or the like. Do you think both the color of the sprinkler system, which he probably must have been aware of as he drove in, right, so that his truck clears, has to be underneath. You don't think there's an open and obviousness to what's above him as he makes that decision to leave the ladder? The photo is pretty dramatic as to the color. I don't know how good the representation is, but...
Here's what I would say to this. The condition that we're talking about here that I think caused this incident wasn't just the red sprinkler. It really was a combination of the red sprinkler being in a space that was lacking for the type of job that he was doing.
You mean the clearance?
The clearance.
That's what I guess strikes me, since as a driver, unless he traverses or she traverses just open highway all the time, constantly reaches abutments that suggest, you know, this much clearance.
Right. But in the abutment case, I mean, no person who is reasonable, who is a driver, knowing that the truck is taller than the abutment, is going to drive the truck through the abutment. But
underneath a bridge or something.
Right. Everyone's going to make sure that their truck can
clear.
Get under the bridge and clear the bridge. But in this particular case, it's also reasonable, though, that when somebody is trying to finish his job and to do his job, he's going to try to work within the area that he has been given. And that's what Mr. Swearingen was trying to do, whether there was red piping above him or not. And I think that's a reasonable act.
You would not equate it because of the job commitment to driving under a bridge that says clearance 18 feet or whatever.
I wouldn't expect that Mr. Swearingen, if his truck was taller than the lower abutment of the bridge, would try to drive through it just in order to be able to get his job done. He was trying to do, I think, what was reasonable under the circumstances. Thank you.
Thanks to all counsel.
Thank you.
Case taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess.